Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The cost of everything has risen, and that has had an impact on your budget. It's also influenced the budget request put forth by the schools. The county commission is likely to raise taxes and fees to cover rising costs. So the question becomes, what might the city of Charlotte do as they ponder the line items in their budget for the next fiscal year? I think we got our answer last night. Your taxes are probably going to go up. We'll be talking about that. Charlotte officials have not yet committed to that. And that's one of the topics we'll explore with Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles this hour. And she's brought along some help. The culprit, City Manager Marcus Jones, is here, the man who plans the budget. And he's the one who will propose that budget to council later on for a vote. Welcome back to you both. Nice to have you here.
Thank you, Mike. Mike.
So, Mayor, before we talk about the budget, let's talk about last week's police shootings in which four law enforcement officers, including CMPD's Joshua Iyer, lost their lives. Four others were injured. You were very emotional on that Monday afternoon.
Well, it was hard not to be emotional when you hear, I think our first press conference, we thought it was three people that were going to lose their lives. And then you go home and you get a couple hours of sleep and then it's four, and it does make it very difficult. I want to express my gratitude for all the people that helped us get through this last week. And I know that we have another funeral for Officer Pelosi, the correctional office at First Baptist, I believe it's tomorrow or Monday. And so I think this will be my third funeral attending for this event. I hope that people know that our law enforcement team, they're doing so much to make sure that the fallen heroes' families are being cared for. And this community has done nothing except make it possible for us to grieve, but also to support the family and to support our officers. It's not hard to think about this. It is something that's at the front of your mind all the time. How do you know, and how do these officers continue to run forward and protect us to make us all safer?
You wrote an op-ed piece last week in the Charlotte Observer about this, in which you said, "We must resolve to remove the barriers we have faced and create the change that brings us a safer Charlotte." What are those barriers?
You know, we've talked about this. You know, in 2020, we had the same kind of incident where we had to create a community and an elected officials group to talk about what can we do better, look over our shoulders and say what could be possible to change the way that we can have safety in our community. Creating, you know, we talk about culture a lot. We really need to create a culture of safety for everyone in the city. And so part of this is around the ideas of, you know, while we have this great loss, does this loss really create an opportunity for us to look carefully at what we do? Chief Jennings has been very clear that this is going to take a long time to figure out what happened during that time and during that the shootings that we had. And I think that what we're trying to do is make sure that we are thorough and that we are looking at what we need to do and change to make it possible for all of us to be safer, especially our law enforcement officers.
Charlotte has been working to create change using a lot of different avenues, including CMPD, along with non-governmental organizations. And this has been going on for several years now, at least. Mostly these efforts have focused on young people in the community. This incident involved an older man. I believe he was in his 30s with a very long arrest record, or record, let's just put it that way. Would any of the efforts that Charlotte has already put forth prevented this from happening? And would any efforts going forward, can they really prevent something like this from happening?
I can't speak to whether or not we can prevent something that is going to happen. This is going on across the country. I've gotten letters and comments from mayors across the country that have gone through this very same kind of incident. But I think what Chief Jennings has said is that we will look and explore all of the opportunities that we have to make people feel safer, but also to protect the officers that we have that are so brave and so many people that they begin to do the work and say, how can we make sure that we are supporting the workforce of our officers?
In that op-ed piece that you wrote in The Observer last week, you also said, quote, "Our immediate duty is to stand with the families of those through prayer, through personal support for their families, and any other means that we can." What can and what should ordinary people do?
Well, you know, it's pretty simple. Almost every one of our fallen heroes have family with kids and spouses, and things are going to change in their lives. So, how can we support them, even if it's just a comment or a letter or a note or something that makes it possible? We've had the opportunity to create with the Police Foundation a funding source so that these young families, including the ones that were wounded, and these families have the ability to not have to worry about what's going to happen next financially. So things like that that we can all do, it's from a penny to however much you want to contribute, but there is a link to the Police Foundation to support these families in their greatest time of need.
Of course, the bottom line here, and with all of these shootings that are happening everywhere around the country, it seems almost every day, this is just another incidence of gun violence, as reprehensible as it is. And you wrote in that article that we must find our collective resolve to do more to prevent gun violence. The perpetrator of this crime had a high-powered rifle, an AR-15, and a 40-caliber pistol, and the rounds that he fired, and there were hundreds of rounds, some of them pierced the armor of law enforcement. So until public officials do something about the proliferation of these high-powered weapons, and elected officials are the only people who can accomplish this, do words, do prayers, do cries for support mean anything?
Of course, they mean something, Mike. You know that. It means
No,
it's
I don't
very
know that.
meaningful.
Mayor,
Well,
excuse
let
me,
me
I don't
share with
know
you.
that.
I know from my position that sometimes a kind word or a thoughtful idea or some presence, just being quiet sometimes, is important to the families that we have. But at the same time, you know, we have to realize that we are working through something that happened to us, it's happening across the country. And sometimes you really feel, how can we get to this level of conversation? And I don't have an answer for that. We know that it's gun violence was here before this incident happened. It's just the difference in the machinery, the guns, and things like that. We're trying as Charlotte, as in our own city, to make it possible by reducing the violence that we have, by Turk, and you'd mentioned the efforts that we're taking, having people walk the streets, having neighbors know each other, how to, and I think the chief would say, how can he look at what was an idea around how do we get people, officers? We've had some incidents that we've actually had people come out of a home alive. And that overrides a lot of the things that we didn't when these other folks did not come out. So let's look at what our officers are doing, how we're giving them the equipment, the training, the opportunity to be aware of what's going on, because that's making it safer for all of them. So in this case, we weren't that fortunate. But at the same time, there are many things that we have to commend them for, especially the training and the efforts that they're making.
So Mayor Lyles is here along with Charlotte City Manager Marcus Jones, and he's here because we're going to talk about the budget that he is proposing for the coming fiscal year. On Monday, I believe it was Monday, you presented a $4.2 billion budget for fiscal 2025. Mr. Jones, how does that compare with last year's bottom line?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Good morning. It's
Good morning.
about $1 billion more. A lot of that has to do with things that are going on at the airport in terms of construction, as well as it's a bond year for us. And as you will know from Monday, I am proposing a bond that's basically twice the size of the plan bond. So that has a lot to do with the overall growth of the budget.
I thought the airport was self-sustaining. Why do they need to be in your budget?
Yeah, so we have three enterprise funds in the budget, which is the airport, CATS, as well as the water system. So it's not a part of the general fund. You're exactly right in terms of that. But the overall budget, that's what makes up that $4.2 billion. The general fund is worth about $898 million of that amount, the general fund budget, yes.
So, Mayor, everyone is facing rising costs brought on in part by inflation, and that includes governments at all levels. You and city council members went to Winston-Salem earlier this year for your annual retreat to talk about the issues facing the city. And that at that retreat, and I think I asked you about this in February, you apologized to the people on the budget committee because you said this year is going to be a little bit harder. Is this what you were talking about, the $4.2 billion budget, which will necessitate a property tax increase?
I think that I was really trying to talk about the way that the council established their priorities. And this budget, the staff and the manager have really put together how do we do something and make something happen in our community that we talked about earlier. And so I think a lot of this budget is built around the budget committee and the council members saying we have to adjust to the inflation, we have to adjust to the growth in our community, and we have to make sure that we continue to be a livable city for all.
So, Marcus Jones, last summer you warned council that sticking to a revenue-neutral budget after the revaluation would make it difficult to maintain services, and now the chickens have come home to roost. To finance that budget, you're calling for a 1.5-cent property tax increase from 26.04 cents per $100 of assessed value to 27.54 cents. How much would that add to an average homeowner's property tax bill, city's property tax bill?
Sure, Mike. From the city's perspective, we start off with the median home value, and that's roughly a little bit over $358,000. So that would add about $4.48 a month to the bill for that 1.5 cent tax increase, or about $53 for the year. And that's again with that median home value.
I know that the county's decisions probably don't and probably can't influence you, but do you know what they're considering in terms of a property tax increase and what that would do when you add it to yours, to the average homeowner's tax bill?
Mike, there's no way you're going to get me in trouble with Dina. She's presenting next week.
But do you, behind the scenes, do you know what they're considering?
No, I don't.
Okay, all right. At Monday night's meeting, Mayor, where Marcus Jones presented his budget to council, you said this.
We really need to take some time to read, absorb, review, inquire.
Now, I know that the city has not had a tax increase in, I think, 5 or 6 years, but isn't that the process you use every year when you're thinking about budgets?
Yeah, that's, I mean, why change what works? I believe that we all need to read through the budget. We all need to wait until we hear from the public, when we have our public hearing next Monday. So, for me, when the manager presents the budget, there's a lot of information there. So, how do we make sure that we have actually figured out how to read the budget, how to question it, what to bring forward, what we're concerned about? So, yeah, that's all working for us.
We'll talk more about this tax increase that's likely to accompany this budget if it is approved by council, and it is likely to be approved, and what you will get for that money when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Charlotte Mayor Vial Lyles. Marcus Jones, the city manager, is here because on Monday he presented his proposed budget to City Council. They'll look at this, they'll vote on it later, and it would go into effect on July 1st. And one of the components of the budget this year is the reality of a probable tax increase, a property tax increase, which hits certain people different ways. City Council's Marjorie Molina seemed kind of matter of fact on Monday night about this proposal.
The truth of the matter is that the cost to run the city, the cost to live has increased substantially.
So, Mayor, this tax increase would add to those costs of the average person out there. How concerned does that make you that in a time of inflation, you're adding to it?
You know, the city's function is to provide services to the community. And if we cut people short on those services, then that just means that we have a bigger problem down the road. I think the way the manager has framed this budget has been to have the most essential services continue and to do it well. I think that we all have to pay more. I mean, you go to the grocery store, you're going to pay more. All of these things are happening. I wish it were possible not to have a tax increase. But at the same time, we are going to have to build sidewalks. We're going to have to make sure that we provide solid waste services. So in some respects, if you think about it, if you live in the ETJ, you have to pay for garbage collection. This is the same thing. We're paying for these services. And we're providing the services in a way that people realize how much good work we accomplish because they are paying their taxes.
It is the City Council who will vote on this, Marcus Jones. And in reporting on Monday's meeting, WBTV said that most of the council seemed okay with this, with the possible exception of Tariq Bakari. And they were interviewing you at a moment in time when Tariq kind of bombed your conversation.
Hey, buddy, we got a lot to talk about with this budget coming up here.
I look forward to
it. Can't wait.
Okay.
So what are his concerns, Marcus?
Well, Councilman Bakari, I'm not speaking for him, but we've over the years talked about how can you make sure that you have as many cuts as you possibly can in terms of reductions before you start to look at the revenue side. And even as I mentioned last year, over the last 6 years, we've cut about $40 million out of this budget. And I begin to become concerned about the delivery of services, anything from 911 calls, response times, to fire inspections. So it came a point where we need to make sure that we're providing a level of service to our residents that they can support.
You may not know the answer to this question, Mayor Lyles, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Do you think that most of the council is on board, or are they taking some time to read, absorb, review, and inquire, as you suggested?
I think that I hope everyone took the weekend and went through the budget. I actually hope that they would wait and not make this decision until after we have a public hearing on Monday. I think we need to hear from people, and that's not just people that are residents here, but our employees need to come down and talk. All of the people that depend on some of these services that we provide, we want to hear from them. And I think that's what we should be doing first.
We mentioned, Marcus, that last year you said by remaining revenue neutral, even though taxes did rise for some people, you held the line on raising taxes overall, and that at some point in time would have to be addressed, and that time has now come. Had inflation not been as severe as it has been for some people in the world at large, would you have had to do this?
Well, I think it would have been easier to balance the budget without a revenue increase, or let's call it what it is, a property tax increase, if we didn't have some of the, I would call the headwinds like inflation. But we're also growing. And one of the things that I thought was important based on council input is that how do we make sure that we're able to keep up with this growth? And what you'll see in this budget, that tax increase, 9/10 of that cent is really around public safety. And I think that's important. The last time we raised taxes almost 6 years ago, a penny, the vast majority of that, 75% of that was for public safety. So we want to take care of folks. We want to take care of our officers, our employees. And the rest of the increase is essentially half of that is related to our capital investment plan, infrastructure, and the other half is related to arts and culture.
Well, a lot of this rising cost of everything in inflation is due to disruptions of the supply chain during the pandemic and the slow recovery from that, and quite honestly, some profiteering. Corporate profits are at record highs, and yet we're paying more for less, it seems. But it also, after the pandemic, there was also this pent-up demand for things, and people went out and spent. Property taxes are not the city's only source of revenue. You get some money from sales taxes. Had people not gone out and spent after the pandemic, although that is slowing down now, would this ask have been greater?
I think, Mike, it would have been sooner. I mean, you've nailed it. When we start to think about the revenue that comes into the city, about 53% of all the revenue in the general fund is property tax. Another 17% is sales tax. So between the two of those, that's 70% of the revenue we bring in. Sales tax has been hot the last few years, based on what you just said. Yeah. And so we have been able to, I guess, toe the line a bit. But as we start to see sales tax come back to those natural levels, it becomes much more difficult with all these costs increased to provide the same level of service.
One of the increased costs that you're having to deal with, obviously, involves increased expenses for things like employee health care and retirement expenses. How much of an increase are you budgeting for those expenses? What role does that play in the overall request,
yeah, I guess? I would say that compensation in general plays a big role in that general fund budget. And what we learned at the beginning of the pandemic is that you had to pay people in order to make sure that you can continue to provide services. And we learned a lot from our hourly employees. I'll never forget one day we were talking to one of them and they said, Marcus, the last increase I got, my check went up by 14 cents and I can't live off on a 14 cent increase. So what we've been able to do is stabilize the workforce. We are seeing vacancies go down. We're seeing service levels go up. But yes, healthcare costs have increased, retirement costs have increased, as well as just general salary and compensation for our employees.
And you mentioned public safety as a primary driver of the last time we went through this. And once again, I think the biggest increase in your proposed expenses is in the public safety category. You are proposing a 5% increase for hourly employees, a 5 to 7.5% increase for police, a 7.5% increase for fire pay plan employees. And the increase you're suggesting will take, I think I'm right about this, so correct me if I'm wrong, it will take police starting salary to $64,485, allow for hiring 200 additional officers and I think 72 more firefighters. Did I leave anything out?
No, clearly you've gone through the budget, Mike. You nailed it. Yes.
You've been inquiring, Mike. That's reading and inquiring.
And absorbing. When was the last time those employees received raises, Marcus?
Well, we have been consistent, Mike, with their raises. And let's talk just a little bit about police. So back in the early 90s, there was an influx of police officers all across the country with federal dollars coming in. So 30 years later, you know, when we get to 21, 22, and 23, we knew we were going to have a bunch of retirements. And we even hit a high point in 2023 when 91 officers retired. Why did I just start off with that? I started off with that because over the past few years, we've had to do some big things with compensation related to police and recruitment and how we bring officers in. I'm proud to say that we're estimating that we'll have 200 additional officers this calendar year. That's twice as many as we had in 2021 and 2022. So compensation that, you know, you said 5 to 7.5%. Well, if you start to look at it over the last 2 years, it's really a 16% increase. And so those are the things that it's been building on fiscal year 23, fiscal year 24, and then today. So we think we are starting to get it right in terms of compensation with our employees.
How big a challenge has it been? Because we keep hearing from schools how difficult it is to recruit and retain teachers because the salaries are simply not commensurate with what perhaps many of them could make in the private sector. How difficult has it been for police, for fire, for city staff attracting and keeping those people?
Mike, what we don't talk about enough is some of the other incentives. And I believe that we have created a culture here where people actually want to come to work for the city of Charlotte and stay. For example, we do prepaid tuition. I mean, if you don't have enough money to register for the class, how would you be able to reimburse us? We have all access transit passes. And we're doing a lot of things with shift differential and education and financial planning. So it's more than just the salary. It's how do you meet a person where they are? I think one of the proudest things in the budget that I'm introducing is that for individuals who are trying to purchase a home in one of our six corridors of opportunity, we have a program where you can have up to $80,000 of financial assistance. So it's things like that that I think make for better employees and a better culture in the organization.
For those people who may be newcomers and not be familiar with the corridors of opportunity, these are areas of town that have been previously neglected. They have been identified as such, and money has been pumped in and other resources have been pumped in to improve the life of the people who live along those corridors, etc. And some of the things that this budget would fund include $25 million in infrastructure improvements in those corridors of opportunity. What kind of infrastructure improvements are we talking about?
So, Mike, that's anything from sidewalks to intersections, but maybe more importantly, you know, one of the things that we're trying to do in this budget is there are a lot of federal dollars in DC for infrastructure. And we decided that while I believe that a sales tax is probably the best way to handle transportation and transit, in the interim, we just couldn't wait. And so what you'll see is a sense of urgency to do projects, not only in these corridors, but throughout the city so that we can also potentially draw down federal funds. And sometimes that's 50 cents on the dollar.
We have an odd arrangement. I don't know whether it's like this anywhere else, but the state is responsible for some of the roads in Charlotte. I think I'm not sure the county is, but the city is certainly responsible. And some of the money in this budget will go, I think $24.6 million, will go to road resurfacing to supplement state funding for that, coming from the general obligation bonds, with over $1 million coming from the city's PAYGO fund, which is the pay-as-you-go fund, money for a rainy day, essentially, and another $1 million from the general fund. The state of some of the roads in Charlotte is miserable. If you care about your car's undercarriage, you care about this. So how many roads will this fix?
Well, Mike, I couldn't give you lane miles right now, but what I will tell you is that we had a reduction in the Powell bill a few years ago. With state funding, providing funds for resurfacing roads. And so what you see this jump is the city coming in to make sure that we don't lose ground. I'll be a broken record with you, though, as we start to think about a different revenue source like the sales tax, where you can apply it to transportation and transit. That's very different. This 1 cent, 1 cent on the property tax in Charlotte's worth about $20 million. 1 cent on the sales tax for Mecklenburg County is worth about $345 million. So you've been doing a lot of math today. I think that there is a great deal more that can be done with that sales tax.
And even though we're talking about a tax increase, you pointed out on Monday night that Charlotte's tax rate is lower than that of 12 other North Carolina cities. What are those cities? How have you been able to keep our rate lower than theirs? And does that necessarily translate to lower taxes? Because I guess property values play a role in this, and property values in Charlotte are higher than they might be in other communities.
That's great, Mike. I'm just going to get you on the team. So I would say, let's frame it this way. So our budget office did an analysis, and cities across the state have done analysis about what we call the cost of service. So when you start to think about property tax, water, stormwater, solid waste, the cost of service, Charlotte is about $1,500 less than the next large city in North Carolina, any city that's over 250,000. So I think there's good value there, and that would be Raleigh. And you're right, over the last 5 years, Greensboro has raised taxes three times, Winston-Salem four times, Durham three times, Raleigh three times. And they are anywhere from 1.7 times our rate to almost 2.5 times our rate. So while we have tried to keep the rate low, and we are by far the lowest tax rate of large cities in North Carolina, I feel comfortable, and maybe comfortable is not the right word, but I feel like we are in good company with having to address big city issues and the revenue sources, which are so limited to them, to use those to address the big city issues.
I've given the mayor this long break. It's the most enjoyable conversation she's had with me in years.
Thank you, manager. Yeah. So, I thank the manager, really. It's kind of nice to sit back and see how it goes.
So I want to bring you into this because I know that you're very concerned about affordable housing, and that means you're concerned about keeping life in Charlotte affordable, not just for those on the lower end of the spectrum, but for everybody, because you want to attract business here, and that's one of the attracting features. We're talking about raising taxes. We're talking about raising fees, which we're about to get into. Does that concern you?
Mike, I'm going to agree with the manager. You really have been thorough on this. But let me say this about this. If we're going to continue to grow and people are going to continue to move here, we have to have a place for people to live. And so that's why I believe, and we talked a lot about this in our strategy session in Winston-Salem that you pointed out, is how do we keep housing affordable? And so the manager is recommending a $100 million bond referendum. When I was first elected, we went from up to $50 million, and people thought that was something. But now, as we see what's going on across this country for affordable housing and people being able to get to work, we have to be a part of the solution here. We have a plan around homelessness. We have plans around staying in place. All of these things really require that we put our whole effort forward. And these are bond-funded projects that will last generations. And so I believe that if you live in our city, we need to help support you so that you can get to work and have a decent place to live. And I believe that the council would endorse that. Overall,
when we come back, we're going to talk about some of these fees that might be going up as a result of this budget. And we're also going to talk about something you alluded to, Marcus Jones, earlier in this conversation. And that is the 400, is it million or billion dollar bond referendum? Million, isn't it? Million. Thank God. $400 million bond referendum when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking budget and possible tax increase and fee increases with Charlotte Mayor Viall Isles and City Manager Marcus Jones. WCNC-TV reports that Charlotte Water, the people that provide us with our water, suggested a rate increase of 5.75 to 5.99%, which would increase an average customer's bill by $4.37 to $4.55 a month. With other fees, that amounts to about $5 or $6 a month, because we're talking about trash collection and other fees that are, probably going to go up too, which would add money to the $54 or $59 tax increase we're talking about. Some people will notice that increase. Others won't notice it at all. And still others might find this increase onerous even before it is coupled with any potential tax increase. Do you know where the breaking point is, Marcus, for folks out there? And are there avenues for relief for those who would find these increases difficult?
Yes. So, Mike, I don't know where the breaking point is, but I do know, and let's focus on water, that with a system that serves not just Mecklenburg County, but multiple counties, multiple cities outside of Mecklenburg County, and the way that this region is growing, you need to maintain the system. It is a triple A rated system. And what is happening, water is actually setting up a foundation that will help individuals who have problems with paying their bills. So I think that's a good start. I will say that, you know, when you start to, and I'll do the math real fast. If you start to add the roughly $5 a month for all the services that you said, the water and the stormwater and the solid waste services, and the $5 for, you know, the average of the median homeowner, you get to $10 a month in terms of taxes and fees. You know, and I won't get into, you know, the be like a professor when it comes to the difference between a tax and a fee. It's a bill. People get bills, and it's tough. So what we're trying to be is thoughtful with other aspects of our budget in terms of what we do to help people, what we do in the corridors, and how do we make sure that we can grow in a way that we can still continue to attract people and businesses to our region.
And I guess by way of explanation of why water, which comes from the river and comes from the sky, is not free, there are chemical costs for treatment and the plants that make those treatments possible to keep the water safe. But costs are rising for Charlotte Water in that area. And WCNC-TV, again, reports that Charlotte Water overspent by at least $168 million, even as they made $100 million in cuts or delayed or stopped 9 projects. So will this offset the need for those cuts and stoppages, and will this help them recoup their loss?
So, Mike, I'll go back to what you said earlier. Supply chain issues, inflation, the cost of labor, it's no different in Charlotte Water than with any other public entity. I will say that the infrastructure needs to be maintained. The infrastructure needs to be built. And these fees maintain the infrastructure and build the infrastructure. The concept of any type of mismanagement is just wrong as it relates to Charlotte Water.
So Sean Kaufman, who is Charlotte Water's deputy director, says despite delays, despite cuts, they are, quote, not impacting current users, and the goal is not to impact future users of the system. So he's saying that they're able to operate in a way that serves their customers' current level, current needs, but without more money, that can't last. Is that what he's saying?
Yeah, Mike, I would say that if you go to any forecast model for Charlotte Water, there's never a forecast that said that there would not be any rate increases in out years. We're talking about rate increases, and I don't want to be wrong, but that may have been in the 3-4 range that's coming to the 4-5 range. So again, thinking about things like supply chain, inflation, labor costs, that drives some of the additional costs as it relates to Charlotte Water and every other city department.
And the solid waste fee, trash collection, might increase by 0.78, or I guess that's 78 cents a month. I guess that's what that is. And the stormwater fee by 47 cents a month. And you recently said that the time had come to ask for a tax hike in order to keep up with the city's needs and growth. So I'm going to ask you what I've asked other city and county managers for 26 years now, because we kept being told that Charlotte's growing and growth is good. When does growth pay for itself, as we were told that it would?
So is that for me or the mayor?
That's no,
it's
for
me.
You.
It's me. So, okay, Mike, as you started off with this $4.2 billion budget, and we talked about enterprise funds versus the general fund. So we're going to take Charlotte Water. We're going to take the airport. We're going to take CATS, and we're going to set those to the side because property tax does not pay for those. Okay. So if we go back to this budget that I'm introduced, it's about a 7.7% increase. It's a little less than $900 million. 70% of that is funded by property tax and funded by sales tax. They pay for police, they pay for fire. We do so much good with that property tax. So that 1.5% is helping us. The bulk of it is for public safety, police, and fire. And a fraction of it is for our transportation and our CIP and housing. So I think if you start to look at it that way, we're trying to pay for the growth that's not related to the enterprise funds, but related to those areas that property tax funds.
I think I understand that, but if I don't, I don't want to waste our listeners' time by you giving me a tutelage here. You're also asking for a total of $400 million in bond referenda on the November ballot. What would that entail? What would that pay for?
Yeah, so Mike, I put it in, let's say, three buckets. You talked about the corridors of opportunity, those six areas that have historically been neglected. We're having that area or neighborhoods increase from about 44 million to 60 million. Housing, we talked about that, from 50 million to 100 million. But I think where we can really, really make an impact outside of housing and the corridors of opportunity is in transportation. So roughly 238 million of that 400 million is related to transportation. It's about 123 million more than we planned 2 years ago. As I mentioned about these federal dollars that are up there that matches from the infrastructure bill, it's a great opportunity for us to begin projects. 55 million of this is for what we call strategic investment areas. 16 of these across the city. And I think that's what Melina may have been excited about, mm-hmm. that we were able to design some projects earlier, even before we could get a sales tax, so we can pull down some federal funds too.
So, Mayor, most of the time when voters have been asked to vote for various bond referenda for which money is attached, like the $50 million affordable bond packages, affordable housing bond packages that we've been asked to vote for, we've been told that don't worry, because saying yes to these bonds will not increase your taxes. CMS bonds just passed last November to the tune of $2.5 billion, the largest bond issue in state history, and we were told in advance that will increase your taxes. So what will this $400 million do? Is this not going to do that, or is it going to be, are we going to be facing a tax increase down the road?
The manager often uses the term, he's got a structured, how do you say it?
Structured balanced budget.
And so when we talk about this bond referendum, it is included in the recommendations that he has made. So then, yes, I think that part of this could be to fund some of the existing programs that we want to put on the ballot, but it is structured budget that does not require a tax increase unless we need to do more in the next year. We try to have a budget that forecasts not just 1 year, but 2 years. So the manager is talking about expenses that generally should stay stable over the 2 year period.
So to be clear, voting yes on this bond package would not necessitate a tax increase. You're not shooting yourself in the foot as a voter by saying yes.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
One bond referendum would, and I'm not sure how many bond referenda there are that make up the $400 million, but one part of this would deal with affordable housing. Every couple of years, voters have been asked to say yes to, and we have said yes to, $50 million bonds for affordable housing. I think that's every 2 years. This time, that figure doubles to $100 million, the largest investment in the program's history. What have we been able to do with the money from previous bonds, and how has that money worked to ease the need?
So Mike, I would say that over the 20 years that we've had the Housing Trust Fund, the last three bonds have been $50 million each.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The previous nine bonds, basically, we've done more, just as much in the last three bonds as we did in the first nine. So we've shown that $50 million makes a difference. That $50 million for the last three bonds, we've had roughly almost half of the 13,600 units that have been constructed from all of the total bonds.
I guess the question I'm trying to get an answer to, and maybe no one can answer this, is we've done this several times, this $50 million. Now we're talking about $100 million. Are we making a difference? Is it helping? Because the need is great and the need continues to grow, and the supply of affordable housing apparently is difficult to maintain. So are we making a difference?
We are making a difference, Mike. I think that what we're trying to do is continue to focus on what we can achieve and the numbers that we have, but we also are trying to determine how we can do this and faster, because if we just wait, it's just the need is just going to grow even higher. I mean, all of us know across this country, housing is an issue when we talk about affordability and upward mobility. And I think that our housing, the $100 million, is really focused on how do we make something that's sustainable and make it in an improvement that we all can support. I don't want us to have continuous backlog and have no solutions. This year, we have no money left in our housing trust fund. So that $100 million probably ensures that we'll be able to continue to do more. But I also think that we all have to plan it in a way that we are very specific with the public when what we're going to do. So I hope that the manager and the council will actually say, for this additional $50 million, this is where we're going to focus. And that will make it possible for people to support this initiative and help us move forward in our housing issues.
So as Marcus pointed out a minute ago, $238 million of this $400 million is for transportation. Part of that transportation bond money, about $20 million, would go toward the city's Vision Zero plan, which aims to end all traffic fatalities by some date in the future. I've forgotten the date. Is that a realistic goal? I mean, how does $20 million end all traffic deaths?
I think our plans are aspirational. I think what we try to do is create these projects that people can see that there is a difference and there's a priority being set for which project is most important, where there's the most danger. So we all would love to have no traffic incidents or loss, but we also know where they are occurring in the most high, the locations that are most problematic. And so the idea is that we start where we can do the most good.
$400 million is nothing to sniff at, Marcus. And we have other bonds outstanding, I'm sure, that we voted yes for. Not we maybe haven't dipped into that bucket yet and haven't spent the money yet. But how does asking for $400 million affect Charlotte's credit rating?
Oh, Mike, we remain a AAA city, and a lot of that has to do by the way we manage our debt, and we'll continue to manage our debt in a way that would maintain that AAA. I will say, and I'll piggyback off of something that you and the mayor were talking about earlier. Yeah, this is designed to show the community that with this 0.3 cent put over into the CIP, that we can do more with affordable housing and we do more with transportation. We're going to design projects that are scalable, and hopefully we'll get to a point where when additional resources come in, i.e. maybe a sales tax, that we're shovel ready for projects in our community.
I don't want to end this conversation without talking about this component of what you've put in the budget. You've earmarked $11 million for the arts and for culture. Is that, I'm not sure which one of you to ask about this, quite honestly. Is that for the arts funding system that the city set up a couple of years ago when it decided to no longer fund the Arts and Science Council at the level it had previously funded and wanted to do it themselves while the county continued with the ASC? Or would this $11 million go into what the Foundation for the Carolinas and the ASC are asking for renewed support for their efforts to fund the arts? They want $10 million from the county, $11 million from the city.
So, Mike, if you allow me, give me some grace, let me reframe it. So what this $11 million does is that it builds off of the public-private partnership for the last few years between the city and the private sector, $36 million over a three-year period for the arts and culture ecosystem. This $11 million gets us back to a level that was, I guess, 2011, when it was a little bit less than $11 million for the ecosystem, and it deteriorated to $3.2 million from the city in 2021. Having said all that, in a perfect world, the concept would be, yes, could we take the city's contribution, the county's contribution, have more money for this ecosystem than in the history of Charlotte-Mecklenburg? And I think that's success.
Well, the question is, I only have 20 seconds. Are you going to put it? Are you going to put that $11 million into your organization, the one that you designed and set up and have begun to run, or are you going to put it back with the ASC and the foundation?
Yeah, that organization goes away June 30th. and it's the city council's decision about where the money goes. The money's just available.
The city will be conducting listening sessions in the coming weeks on this budget with a public hearing on May 13th, and then the council will vote on this on June 10th. Whatever they decide will go into effect on July 1st, I believe. Marcus Jones, our city manager, and Mayor Vi Lyles with us for the hour. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Mike.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.